Joining me on the line is Babak Khorram, who is a columnist at the Commentary. Since September 2003, he has written the Khorram Country column, which has featured such subjects as health and science, international sport, and current affairs. He was born in Iran, and he recently graduated from the University of British Columbia. He will be returning to UBC in the fall to pursue postgraduate work. Babak's just returned from Cuba, and he discusses the culture, the country, and his trip in a new edition of Khorram Country, which you can find at www.thecommentary.ca. Welcome to the Commentary and this new interview segment, Babak Khorram. Good evening, Mr. Khorram.
Good evening. Glad to be with you, Joe.
You saw Fahrenheit 9/11 last week, as did I. What did you think of the film and Michael Moore's work?
I thought the film was entertaining. Definitely an eye-opener. I mean, it had its flaws, but I think it made some good points. My feeling about Michael Moore is simple. I mean, at times he may be obnoxious or even whatnot, but for the most part, I think he does good work, and he's a left-winger. I mean, in the United States, it's a good thing because you have, you know, conservatives, the right-wingers, and Michael Moore is essentially the other end of the spectrum.
Do you think that the Americans in their political views are rather narrow between left and right? There seems to be no middle ground.
For the most part, I would say no. I would say that there are Americans that are sort of have a centralist ideology. It's neither hardcore conservative or hardcore liberal. There are definitely a group of Americans that are in the middle there, and but it seems that the gap between the liberals and the conservatives is quite wide, and often there's some tenacious battles over some key issues, both socially and fiscally and whatnot.
Christopher Hitchens, the preeminent commentator on both sides of the Atlantic, wrote of Fahrenheit 9/11, to describe this film as dishonest and demagogic would almost be to promote those terms to the level of respectability. To describe this film as a piece of crap would be to run the risk of a discourse that would never again rise above the excremental. To describe it as an exercise in facile crowd-pleasing would be too obvious. Fahrenheit 9/11 is a sinister exercise in moral frivolity, crudely disguised as an exercise in seriousness. It is also a spectacle of abject political cowardice masking itself as a demonstration of dissenting bravery. Is Mr. Hitchens harsh in describing the film this way?
That's interesting, because I did read the Hitchens article, and for the most part I do enjoy his editorials, his columns.
This is the guy that, you'll recall, put Henry Kissinger on trial.
Yeah.
Wrote that book and did the documentary.
He's also the guy that made some critical statements regarding Reagan and Reagan's sort of tenure as president. But I think a lot of the comments he made regarding the movie were unfair. I mean, he definitely points out some flaws, and the documentary itself had some flaws. But for the most part, I thought it was accurate and made interesting points. I mean, it was based on the facts of before and after September 11th, the events that took place. I mean, did Michael Moore exaggerate some points? Yes. Did he fail to include some points that might have, you know, been important to mention? Yeah. But for the most part, there was nothing in there that was inaccurate, and I thought all his main points were made and made accurately.
Do you think Americans will buy this? Do you think Americans will think that this will have an effect on their vote come November?
I think, for the most part, many Americans have made up their mind, barring any unforeseen event in the near future. I think those that are on that have decided to vote Democrat will vote for Kerry come for Senator Kerry come November, and those that are Republicans will vote for President Bush come November. But I think the movie has the effect that it's probably made liberals, Democrats, more staunch supporters of Kerry, and conversely, it's made those that are conservative Republicans, even stauncher supporters of President Bush.
Maureen Dowd, the op-ed columnist in the New York Times, has a new book out called Bush World. She said on I Miss last week, Bush World is a sort of alternate universe where things are the opposite of what they seem. President Bush said the other day, it is a ridiculous notion to assert that because the United States is on the defensive, more people want to hurt us. We are on the offensive because people do want to hurt us. Ms. Dowd continues, I mean that is a perfect Bush World quote. It's not true, it's nonsensical, and it's the very opposite of what is true. His new campaign motto is America is safer, be afraid, be very afraid. Everything is an oxymoron. Is Bush 43 the oxymoronic president?
I think in many ways George W. Bush is the oxymoronic president. I mean, he sort of created this environment, and maybe not solely George Bush, but his administration has anyway, of this environment that, you know, we're living in a time of abstract danger, unknown fears. And at the same time, he beats this instrument that, oh, since 9/11 took place, America's a much safer place. The world's a much safer place. Because of the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, the world's a much safer place. When in reality...
But that doesn't preclude them from raising the terror alert warning last week,
doesn't.
Even if it's faulty and old intelligence.
It doesn't. And for the most part, I don't know if the invasions of Afghanistan, certainly the invasions of Iraq, have made North Americans and Americans and Americans in particular safer. I don't know if it has. I mean,
do you think Bush is a puppet of the neocons, sort of the Cheneys, the Rumsfelds?
I think so. I think many of his policies I won't go as far to say that Bush is played like a puppet, but I would say that a lot of his policies, especially his foreign policies, are, driven by the neoconservatives in the administration, the Dick Cheney, the Paul Wolfowitz, the Donald Rumsfeld.
Ms. Dowd, in her book Bush World, which is out by Putnam published it, and I'm supposed to get a copy, she says very cleverly, so I would sum it up by saying that the neocons wanted a utopia in Iraq, but because of their myopia, we've ended up with a dystopia in the Middle East.
Yeah, so that is an interesting quote, and I, you know what, as much as and it's true, it's true. I mean, Iraq is, I won't say it's a quagmire, I won't say it's the next Vietnam, but it's a troubling situation. I mean, there doesn't seem to be an end in sight, and if anything, it's, given fuel to the fire of extremism. That's certainly.
And Al-Qaeda wasn't in Baghdad before, when Saddam Hussein was in power, right?
I won't say, I don't know that for sure. But I certainly would say that it wasn't their chief operating base. I don't think it would have been. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, Saddam Hussein's existence, I mean, had Saddam Hussein been having deals and so forth with Al-Qaeda, he knew that the United States would turn Iraq into a parking lot. And I just don't know. I mean, Saddam's whole point was so that he could survive, that he could continue being this ruthless dictator, and I don't know if he would take such a chance. I mean, especially at the end of his dictatorship, he seemed to be becoming more pragmatic anyway. I mean, as ruthless as he was.
We're taping this on a Tuesday night. In Wednesday's Washington Times, there's an article there. They say that they've uncovered plans, Al-Qaeda's plans, that Osama bin Laden will supposedly release a new message, and that'll be the signal for his followers, his people, to launch another attack, this time an assassination attempt on a certain Western leader, unspecified or not. Do you think that the war in Iraq, the wars in Afghanistan, and just the sort of culture that we have in the world, where it's sort of the United States against everyone else, has that strengthened Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden? Our Americans are obviously not safe.
An emphatic yes. I mean, I hate to say it, but yes, it has. I mean, you have to look at it as, whether rightly or wrongly, the Arab world and for the most part the Islamic world resents the United States and their invasion of a sovereign nation, which is Iraq. I mean, to many people, it didn't make perfect sense. I mean, Afghanistan, yes, because why? Because it was the home of the Taliban, and the Taliban were giving refuge to Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden included. Iraq, on the other hand, was a different situation. It had a ruthless dictator, as I mentioned earlier, but there was no clear evidence that it had links to Al-Qaeda. I mean, there were, you know, okay, maybe Mohammed Atta met an Iraqi agent in Prague and Czechoslovakia or whatnot, but there was no sheer evidence linking the two. And invading Iraq was seen as an aggressive sort of jingoistic act in much of the Islamic world, and in specifically the Arab world.
Bush and Kerry, November 2004, who do you think will win that race? I don't think, for Americans at least, it's about Iraq. I think, you know, it's the economy, I think it's jobs, it's the price of gas. That considered, what do you think will happen in November?
I think Bush will win by a significant margin. I mean, there's a lot that can happen from now until November. I mean, I hope Bush doesn't win, but I just don't see... history is on Bush's side. Let's face it. I mean, never has a wartime president lost the re-election. Although the polls slightly favor Kerry as of now, I think come November, the U.S. voters will just rally around their president. In my opinion, wrongly, but... I feel that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think myself it's far too soon to tell. I mean, we've got, 3 months to go,
I mean,
roughly?
That's true. A lot can happen from now until November, so... but for now, that's the...
You're going out on a limb and you're saying Bush.
Yeah.
10 points?
Yeah. That would be...
Really?
Yeah, that would be...
That he'll take the undecided?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see the fiasco we saw.
Do you think it's incumbent that the result that you're presuming will happen because of a terrorist attack? Do you think that'll strengthen Bush's stature? God forbid.
You know, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, people hope that nothing like that would happen, but an event like that would certainly, I mean, no one would want to say that the Republicans or Bush is hoping for something like that to happen, but if something like that did happen, certainly. I mean, you'd have to think that Bush is a shoo-in.
So Kerry as this war hero in Vietnam, three Purple Hearts, a Silver Star, that is not strong enough for Americans, that they would rather have this guy who bombed out of the Alabama National Guard as their commander-in-chief?
That's a good point. I mean, but a lot of Americans want to look past that and just look at the track records of Republicans versus Democrats. And the Republican administration versus what would become the Democratic administration. And the Republicans have a lot more hawks in the cabinet and so forth. That probably a majority of Americans feel would be better during a situation like that. Wartime situation.
You're the author of Coram Country, which, as we said earlier, can be found at www.thecommentary.ca, another shameless plug. What is Coram Country, and what are you trying to do, I guess? That's the question.
Well, as you know, Coram Country is a column that I write for thecommentary.ca, and it appears roughly once every few weeks, and I cover a wide variety of topics, international politics, sports, health and science, so on. And I just hope to entertain as well as inform the reader.
Let's tell the story of where we got the name Coram Country. I edit his column, so we were thinking of titles for the column, for his column, and there's a program on MSNBC called Scarborough Country, which is hosted by the former congressman from Florida, Joe Scarborough. And we sort of robbed that from him. So if let's put that out there and let the public know that we shamelessly robbed that from the geniuses at MSNBC. Bacoram's not as
never know with MSNBC. They could put a lawsuit on us.
Not as conservative as Joe Scarborough, I bet.
No.
Sort of liberal. You went to Cuba recently. See, I guess this is proof positive that you're not a conservative. You went to Cuba. What was that like?
Cuba is an amazing country. I think it's an important country. But my trip there was fantastic. I mean, it's a very beautiful, serene country. The people are friendly, very friendly. And it was an eye-opener, especially coming from a sort of a Western country. I mean, not only Western Hemisphere, Cuba is also in the Western Hemisphere, but sort of a democratic, free enterprise country, and going to this socialist island nation in the Caribbean, and it was a real eye-opener.
You walk down New York City, you walk down Las Vegas, Chicago, the big buildings, you can smell the avarice, the greed, the capitalism. You walk down Havana, you walk down Veradero, where you went to. Do you feel that you're in a socialist country? Is it that pervasive in the air?
Yes, it's different. I mean, well, there's also the added fact that relative to the United States, relative to Canada, Cuba is a poor country. I mean, I wouldn't say that there's signs of absolute poverty. I mean, I didn't see any evidence of malnutrition, growth epidemics or anything like that. But definitely there is that sort of air of socialism. The key symbols of free enterprise and globalization aren't as present. But then again, I mean, since the decline of communism in throughout the world, I mean, the breakup of the former Soviet Union, China heading towards a more free enterprise system, Cuba has had to evolve in its own right. And going in Cuba, you can buy $400 boxes of cigars, a $100 bottle of rum, etc. So, I mean, it is changing towards that more open, more free enterprise system, I feel, anyway.
Clinton was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart on Monday night, and he talked about this, and he also talked about it in his speech at the Democratic Convention, about Kerry helping out in it was under Clinton's watch, as you'll recall, that relations were normalized with Vietnam, also another socialist communist state. Do you think that Cuba will ever emerge from this embargo?
I hope so. I think it certainly deserves to. I mean, Bush keeps throwing this rhetoric that Castro is this evil dictator, that he's, you know, a gross purveyor of human rights in Cuba. But, I mean, relative to other things we've seen in Latin American countries, Castro's a godsend. I mean, he's certainly not this vicious dictator that that Bush makes him out to be. Should he step down? Should Cuba have free elections? Of course it should. But that said, it's not sort of this police state, this that people make it out to be. It's certainly not that.
And the means justifies the end, sort of.
Yeah, and as for Cuba being a terrorist state, a state sponsor of terror, I just don't see it. I mean, make an argument for Syria, Iran, Libya, that's another issue. But as for Cuba, I mean, every year there's some nutbag from Texas that decides to go down there to try and assassinate Castro, whereas I don't see Cuba making the same type of attempt in the United States. And also, not to mention the history, I mean, the mafia used to run Cuba. Isn't that a form of terrorism in and of itself? How about the Bay of Pigs invasion? How about that? I mean, well, anyway, the hypocrisy continues.
So you recommend Fahrenheit 9/11, you dislike President Bush, you recommend that everyone should go to Cuba.
Well,
I recommend.
I mean, if you can be open-minded, and certainly I think people shouldn't go there because they feel that the people are oppressed and they need our support by us not going there and hoping the Castro regime falls down sooner.
I think it's a good balance on the site. You know, I'm the rabid conservative, and here we do have a left-wing pinko commie. I think it's democracy, and that's the way it is, I suppose.
I'm certainly not a communist, if that's what you're implying.
Well, you know. Anyways, thanks for doing this. This is the inaugural interview segment. Later this week, we plan to chat with David Schreck, a former aide to Premiers Glenn Clark and Nigel Desange, a former MLA himself. He's got a clever website where he's holding the Campbell government's feet to the fire. We'll also talk to Warren Kinsella, a former aide to Jean Chrétien, and a lot of formers here. We'll also talk to Jamie Lee Hamilton in the coming weeks. She, of course, the advocate for the downtown east side. Babak, thanks for joining us. Babak Coram's Coram Country can be found on the Commentary website, www.thecommentary.ca. Let us know what you think of the new interview segment. Email me at editor@thecommentary.ca with your thoughts, ideas, and suggestions. This segment was produced by yours truly with technical production by Vishal Durr. For The Commentary, I'm Joseph Plana.